Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta. What's your all-time favorite album? An album that means so much to you that when you discovered it, you felt like the band had created it just for you. For novelist Jonathan Lethem, it's Talking Heads' Fear of Music. Jonathan writes about his love affair with the band's third album in a book called Fear of Music. It's part of the 33 and a Third series of short books about music.
My radar was up, and I was looking, by that time I was already a little bit into the idea that there was this new music coming to get me, and I wanted it to be for me, and I wanted to identify with it, so I was perfectly ready. And when Fear of Music started getting promoed on the radio, I was listening to WNEW, that was my rock station in New York City at the time, it was with this mysterious, ghostly voice that just kept saying, Talking Heads has a new record. It's called Fear of Music. And it's like, you know, the greatest trailer for a movie that you ever saw, except there's no scenes in the trailer. It's just the title.
Talking Heads have a new album. It's called Fear of Music. Talking Heads have a new album. It's called Fear of Music.
And I think I was already ready to love this thing. And then it hit the streets. And the single in New York, of course, had to be Life During Wartime, which name-checked CBGBs and the Mud Club. And the cover of the album was really dark and forbidding, and I brought it home. And, you know, this thing was just, like, so made for my personal version of alienated, you know, jangly, nervous New York kid that I wanted to just take it into my body.
Yeah, your identification with it was so complete that, as you write in the book, you might have wished to wear the album Fear of Music in place of your head so as to be more clearly seen by those around you. What was it about Fear of Music that you found so captivating?
The tricky point of view in the lyrics, you know, that creates a kind of a persona that hides as much as it reveals. You know, you don't really know who the speaker is or what matters to them, but they're so full of attitude. This kind of thorny, alienated, self-loathing irony. And I thought, well, this is an attractive stance to wear out into the world. You know, for me then, it seemed like it was the right way to deal with being 14 years old in the middle of the 70s, or in the late 70s in New York City. I felt so at odds with everybody and everything, and the city felt very dangerous, and but also enticing. And the album seemed to create an image of a powerful response to being disempowered that I wanted to make my own. This ain't no party. This ain't no disco. This ain't no fooling around. No time for dancing. For loving
dummy. I ain't got time for that now. The most well-known song on Fear of Music is probably Life During Wartime, and in your book you describe the song as voluminous. Can you explain what you mean?
One of the things that's exciting about that record, especially when you can back up, you know, as we now have the privilege of doing, is it was partly the sound of a very tentative band in certain ways, or very skeletal band with a kind of sort of thin, tinny sound in certain ways, and not made up of super expert musicians, although they'd come up with a combination of elements that was very, very interesting. But right around that time, and I think Fear of Music is the album where it's happening, and Life During Wartime is in some ways the song where it's happening, they began to discover their own power. And their power, it turned out, had partly to do with improving their own attack, becoming more competent and forceful, but also in simply inviting other musicians into the studio. I mean, one of the things about that song that's so different is there are these bongo players on it. There's these polyrhythms. Mm-hmm. Well, if you know anything about the next chapter of the story of Talking Heads, it's all about those polyrhythms and those other guys in the studio, additional drummers and bass players and backup singers thickening the sound. It's as though the very kind of lonely, alienated geek presence that had been their signature was now going to have this army of persuasive, funky sounds at its back, and it wasn't going to be so lonely anymore.
One of the things in the Life During Wartime chapter, you talk about the sturdy versatility that the song has, that it's open to different interpretations among different listeners. Can you tell me a bit about that?
What's great about a metaphor like Life During Wartime is it's so fundamental that you can kind of identify with it on a literal level or all sorts of other allegorical levels. I mean, who isn't like having a war? Like every morning, you know, getting up and getting a cup of coffee and getting my teeth brushed, that's life during wartime.
Absolutely.
On the other hand, the story seems to portray a very extreme condition. People dealing with, you know, cities melting down and they're on the run and they've got weapons and there's no authority and, you know, they're having to discard their life of comfort. You could think of this as an adolescent in high school. You could think of this as a post-apocalyptic environment like Cormac McCarthy's The Road or anything in between. It was versatile. It was there to be made your own.
Throughout the book, you have a series of chapters that pose specific questions, and there was one chapter in particular that posed one of these questions that I found particularly intriguing. The chapter that asked the question, is Fear of Music a science fiction record? Why did you want to explore this question?
Right at that same time, a certain kind of science fiction, like a dystopian science fiction, seemed really, really not just cool and interesting to me, but super immediate. Like it was describing the world in a way that was urgent to me. And that was, you know, certain of Philip K. Dick's novels or J.G. Ballard, a couple of books by a guy named Thomas Dish. And when Fear of Music came out, I put it in that framework. And life during wartime is at the heart of this idea that maybe this album is evidence of, you know, it's kind of a signal from a future war that's right around the corner. You know, I mean, if you were pitching it as a movie, you'd say a world just 10 minutes into the future. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the way that the environment seems to be breaking down and human relationships seem to be breaking down under the pressure of something oppressive, omnipresent and horrible on this record feels like it's telling a dystopian tale, even if you can't pin down what it is.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, maybe this really was consonant with what I was experiencing, the thrill I was getting, the relevance I was sensing when I would read like a J.G. Ballard disaster novel.
Mm-hmm. And Kafka too, Franz Kafka, right? You mentioned
him
in that
chapter.
Yes, well,
of course,
yeah.
Paranoid attitudes and the institutions were coming to get you.
One of your favorite songs on the album is the very last song, Drugs. What is it that you like so much about this song, Jonathan?
I mean, it's transfixing. I just find it really, on that song, more than anything else on the record, the next record by Talking Heads is sort of predicted and projected, which is to say it's got an atmospheric, mysterious, sonic quality to it that, above all, it just forces you. You know, your body's having a response to it before your mind is. It's like you've walked into a room and the room is really different from any room you've ever stepped into before. And I really liked that drugs were the overt subject. You know, I think that it's funny because everyone associates drugs with like 1960s rock and roll. And we all know certainly that the musicians were taking loads of drugs, but they rarely are addressed as a topic. Now, maybe this is partly in fear of radio censorship, right? Mm-hmm. But I also think that in some way they're being mystified by going unmentioned. And what I liked about Talking Heads' song Drugs partly was just that it matter-of-factly said, you know, wow, I've taken some and things are really weird now. That it was like putting them into real life instead of leaving them out of the frame as if they were just some sort of, you know, esoteric or almost religious
experience. Yeah, something mystical to reach for and kind of out of reach,
Another theme on the record, and it's a paradoxical one given all I've been saying, is it's a record about parties. But it's a record about feeling weird at the party, not being comfortable at the party, you know. And this idea emerges in Life During Wartime when he says, this ain't no party, this ain't no fooling around. But it's also in a song called Memories Can't Wait. And especially in Drugs, there's the sense that you've come to have fun and you've come to a place where you're looking to connect with other people. You know, it might be a nightclub like in Heaven or a bar, but it's not working completely, or you haven't been able to connect, or you still notice yourself too much, you're self-conscious. And so in Drugs, there's this kind of nice rhythm where the character is very present for a while, and then he sort of evaporates into mist, and you hear these birds twittering, and it's as though he's forgotten himself for a while, and he's become just a dancer or a body at the party. He's become part of almost a sort of natural order and gotten away from his all-too-present brain for a little bit.
Yeah, and as you write in the book, it's a while before we hear from the character, from the narrator, because it takes up until a minute 20 or something before we're even aware of his presence.
Yeah, it's as if the camera is in deep focus and the character is standing too close. So you see him as a blur and you just see the room in really good focus, and then someone pulls the focus and suddenly there's a guy there.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the end we have the, as you write, the found speech, the some kind of PSA that anticipates the project that David Byrne and Brian Eno, who produced Fear of Music, the project they'd work on together.
There's a little bit of collage music going on at the very end of that song, and it's not one of the first things you think about with Fear of Music as a record, but it's a sort of an arrow pointing to the intense collage aspect of Byrne's next couple of projects.
Talked briefly a few minutes ago about David Byrne, about the character that he developed on these first three Talking Heads records. And this is a character that you describe as a fearful and conflicted personality. And you've mentioned that a bit, but could you tell me a bit more about that was something that appealed to you because you felt that way too?
This is the kind of appeal that derives from someone naming the things that you think you're not allowed to name. And so therefore empowering themselves or licensing themselves to become, current word might be like proactive. So if you're walking around feeling kind of alienated by, well, you know, nearly everything, and the song list is like a list of things you might be kind of alienated by, cities and parties and air and heaven and drugs and animals. Well, if you can suddenly give a name to all of these peculiar feelings, these sensations of being persecuted or paranoid or unnerved by your environment, things you're meant to take for granted, well, then maybe actually that alienation can become kind of your method or your tool. It might be a scalpel you can use to cut into the world.
Mm-hmm. Like as you described the character, as you had this great quote about being like a set of glasses you can put on and not only look through but think through. That kind of idea, right?
Yeah.
You wrote this book, Jonathan, some 30 years after Fear of Music first came out. Has all the life experience you've had in those three decades changed the way what you hear and how you listen to Fear of Music now? Does it sound different to you?
Ironically, I hear Fear of Music much more on traditional terms now than I ever could have at the time. At the time, it seemed to me Talking Heads had just invented this out of whole cloth and it made the rest of, you know, recorded music look silly. It was like, here's the future and forget the rest. Now I hear it and I think a lot about the stuff that led up to it for these individual musicians and just for the tradition.
Jonathan Leatham is the author of Fear of Music. It's part of the 33 and a third series of short books about popular music. What's your all-time favorite album? Let us know. You can just send an email to beta@wpr.org.